The Talk of the Northwest, The Greg Hughes Show on Highland Radio.
Hello and a very good morning. You're very welcome along to the programme, 9:05 on this Monday, the 19th of January, 2026. I do hope you're all very well indeed. Did you have a nice weekend? I hope so. Maybe you were working. Hopefully that went well for you. Maybe today's your day off, or perhaps you had your feet up. Whichever way, it's great to have you on board for the programme. We're here with the next for the next 2 hours. We've got lots lined up, as you can imagine, and we want your views and your comments throughout the course of the morning. Last week, busy week on the text machine, the WhatsApp machine, 086 60 25,000. That is the WhatsApp and text number, 086 60 25,000, or you can give us a call on 074 91 25,000. If you want to email, it's comments at highlandradio.com, and you can listen to the podcast as well. We have it in a new format now. It's all in one audio file, and you can listen to it on our website. So if you are listening to it, please feel free to text or WhatsApp or email. We'll pick up your comments and carry them through to the next day. But we're also available now on Spotify and iTunes. So if you want to give the show a like or a subscribe there, it'd be greatly appreciated. It's just maybe more convenient for you at times to listen in the car or on a jog or what have you. So you get this show in one file, nicely edited for you, available on our website, but also now on Spotify and on iTunes to listen to at your leisure. And also, too, if you hit the bell, it notifies you when a new episode has gone up, which is great, I think. Hopefully it's useful to some of you. The Derry People, Donegal News this morning. The court service spent €110,000 on interpreters in Letterkenny in 2025, the paper can reveal. Figures provided to the Donegal News from the court service through a request under Freedom of Information Law shows €110,000 was spent on interpreters in the Letterkenny court services. The Freedom of Information states that €43,000 of the expense related to invoices from 2024, with 67% relating to 2025. It's interesting to know. I'm not sure what to do with this information, but it's there for you and broken down in more detail if you are interested in that. On to the Derry News. The Irish language, new Irish language school set for Waterside. There are exciting times ahead for Irish medium education in Derry's Waterside. Having just celebrated its first birthday, Nailskull on Parsha Derry, Trasna is currently enrolling nursery age children for September 2026. It also has its eyes on a much bigger prize in terms of developing and maintaining or sustaining Derry's Irish language community. Okay, more on that in the front of and inside that paper today. A bizarre old geopolitical situation unfolding over Greenland. It's covered in the front of or on the front of all the papers today. I'll take it from the Irish Independent. Ireland has signalled it will support any EU response to potential US tariffs, with the Taoiseach insisting that the sovereignty of Greenland and Denmark cannot be violated. Micheál Martin said Europe must be ready to respond if US President Donald Trump proceeds with threats to implement a wave of increasing tariffs on member states, while warning against any knee-jerk reactions. So overnight, Donald Trump suggested sending the army into Greenland. It's quite interesting because he seems determined personally to take ownership of Greenland, and he'll pay whatever price is necessary, but I think he will also, if need be, take it by force. So he has the Antarctic, he would have Greenland, and then in the middle of that is Canada. So I'd say Canadians are looking on going, right, okay, what is next? And he seems to feel that he can do whatever he wishes to do. Ireland's in a sticky wicket here, really, because we are obviously particularly more dependent, I think, than most European countries on American companies. But we've towed the line with the EU to such an extent that we're continuing to do it on this issue. That being said, we probably would hold this stance anyway, because a friend, a neighbour, another European country, we have a superpower looking to just simply take it over. So I presume we'd put up some sort of a opposition to that. Well, Donald Trump's comments come amid reports that member states are preparing potential countermeasures worth up to 93 billion euro, including tariffs or restrictions on US companies, ahead of key meetings with Mr. Trump at the World Economic Forum in Davos this week. And reference this just with Lee Gooch ahead of 9 o'clock, and it's about how wealthy some people are in this country and how disproportionate the wealth is distributed. The Republic's 11 billionaires are collectively wealthier than 3.46 million people in the state, according to Oxfam Ireland. So 11 individuals have more money than 3.46 million. Again, what do you do with this information? I mean, you have to have a situation, don't you, whereby if people work hard, they make all the right connections, they make the right decisions, that they become wealthy. We all can't be wealthy. I mean, what are we supposed to do to take their money and just share it out? I mean, you can't do that either, can you? So what do we do with this info? What would you like to see done with it? 11 individuals have more wealth than 85% of adults. But that being said, if you've got, if you're lucky enough to have 50,000 euro in your bank account, you're wealthier than every other person who has less than you. But I suppose this is a combined wealth too, so that doesn't count. But there are many, many people in this country that don't have anything. In a report highlighting widening inequality globally in advance of the start of the World Economic Forum in Davos, which I've already mentioned, the charity said that total Irish billionaire wealth stood at 46.3 billion at the end of last year. That's a rise of 2% over 12 months. So that's really, really quite a remarkable amount of money, isn't it? Right, and we're forking out really quite a remarkable amount of money towards schools. 27 million, in fact. I think it's a massive amount of money. Parents paid around 27 million in voluntary contributions to schools in a single school year, figures obtained by the Irish Daily Mail show. The total relates to the 2023-2024 school year across primary and secondary level, and is believed to be the first time an annual figure for voluntary contributions has been made public. Research by the St. Vincent de Paul in 2023 found voluntary contributions ranged from 30 to 550 euro per child, with an average of 140 euro per child across all school types. Its report, conducted by Grant Thornton, found 86% of parents had a request for payment from their child's school, while 80% said voluntary contributions were not clearly communicated on being optional. And that's come up on this programme before. You know, when is a voluntary contribution voluntary? I've seemed to recall cases from parents contacting us whereby access to certain things was being withdrawn if there wasn't a voluntary contribution. But 27 million euro, and the truth be told, that's 27 million that parents are having to fork out because the schools aren't getting enough funding from central government. I don't think I can be contradicted in relation to that. And finally, it's a tough old job being a guard. More than 600 Gardaí were injured in the line of duty last year, with more than half of those assaulted. Figures released under Freedom of Information legislation show the number of casualties rose by 11% compared to 2024. Among the incidences in which Gardaí were assaulted were riots outside the City West complex in Sagart in County Dublin. Officers were attacked by protesters over the alleged sexual assault on a child by an international protection applicant. There were also three separate incidences in a weekend that same month in Dungarvan, County Waterford, where 7 Gardaí were injured. So the total in 1 year, 600, and that's a significant increase on previous years. What is that down to, do you think? Is it a falling lack of respect for an Garda Síochána? I think that has to be a part of it. But also, too, I suppose Gardaí are being asked to put themselves in some tricky situations too as well. Right, let's go to Councillor Jerry McMonagle. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
You were off for a hike, was it? Or perhaps it was other business, but you were up in Kirkstown Forest in Letterkenny at the weekend. And what did you spot?
Yeah, look, it's a nice forest walk, and the council's invested about 40,000 in putting in benches and picnic benches and seats and all. So I go up there regularly. It's a lovely place. You meet a lot of people there who enjoy the walk. I was up there on yesterday morning, and I come across two sort of piles of rubbish that had been dumped. One was all timber. It looks like it was stripped out of a house and just dumped at the side of the walk. And the second load was about six or seven bin bags full of loft insulation. I mean, this is a beautiful place. Great views. It's nice and nice walk. The forest was around. It's been recently cut in the last year. And it's growing again. And a lot of people visit it and people respect it. But unfortunately, at the weekend, we found out that not everybody respects it. And I've been on to the litter wardens this morning and informing them about it. And they'll probably have to go now and lift it. And the annoying thing about this, Greg, is that all of it was recyclable. Mm. And we have many places where we can take this type of rubbish, so-called rubbish, that could be recycled and put to other use. I mean, and this day, where the cost of living through the roof, it could have been, it was like laths of timber, 2x2 and 2x1. It could have been cut up and used for fire wood, you know. It could have been used for other activities, someone to make something. But to just dump it at the side of a beautiful scenic walk, I just think it's disgraceful.
But they went to the bother of bagging the insulation and sealing the bags.
Yeah.
It would make you wonder, did the person who bagged this stuff dump it, or are they availing of a dump run type service or something? I don't want to get into speculation, but why bag it up like that and then just chuck it in, you know, the way they have done there? It doesn't make a great deal of sense to me.
No, that was my thought exactly. I said, well, at least, you know, they've bagged this, they've tied it up, they've sealed it. You know, the next step would have been take it to the recycling centre. You know, put it out in your bins. You know, have your bin collector take it away. You know, that all could have been done. But just to go up and dump it at the side of a scenic walk where a lot of people enjoy, you see them up there almost every evening and particularly at the weekends. It's just the biggest belief, to be honest.
Mm.
You know, and I see people were commenting that, you know, was talking to me. I know Donegal County Council, if they find evidence of a polluter, they will follow that polluter and they will prosecute them and take them through the courts. This all costs money as well. The fines mightn't be as strict or as strong as they should be, but they do follow up every pollution that they come across, every illegal dump. And if they have information as to who dumped that there, they will follow them. But what we need to do is educate people. Our litter wardens, in conjunction with our tidy towns, do an awful lot of work throughout the year in cleaning and keeping Donegal tidy and pristine. There's many initiatives around collecting litter, whether it be paint tins or old batteries and just general litter along the road. The litter wardens are there along with the community and helping and assisting to keep Donegal pristine. And then we have people who are just, I just don't know, the biggest belief for what goes through their head, that they think that they can go up and dump this amount of rubbish. Look, it was at least a large van load, if not two van loads. It would have took two trips to, because there were two different piles. So I'm taking it that there was at least two trips up into the forest to dump it. That's just beggars belief.
Did anything ever come of the suggestion that we would try and monitor with mobile cameras or whatever it is, you know, black spots? Because I think what needs to be done is people need to be caught in the act in some of these regular places. And we know where they are all around the county, I think, because we discuss them regularly here and I'm sure you get notification of them. But, you know, it couldn't be too difficult, I don't think, to set up some sort of a motion activate. Well, maybe there's GDPR issues and people could be up there for other reasons, but there has to be a way, you would imagine, because you would only need a couple of high profile situations, I think, to deter dumping in certain areas. It's the same as we do with speeding.
Yeah, look, with the type of products that are on the market now, that could be easily done, those type of cameras, and they do employ them in areas where it's a problem. As you say, there's GDPR issues and all that has to be looked into, you know. But they are employed by the council, by the wardens, and if people are detected, they will be followed up and prosecuted. I don't know, can we do it at every walk? We have so many beautiful walks in the county. But where there is a problem, I'm sure I've been informed that, yes, that they take those type of measures to try and identify the polluters.
Yeah, and even if they were sort of, you know, rotated around places, so you had a box where someone wouldn't know if the camera was in or not. But anyway, maybe that's just too simple a solution. Anyway, I just wish people would stop.
But the message we need to, I like to send out is for people to look, they look around them, look what we have to offer.
I know.
Look
I
at
know.
The enjoyment people get out of those walks, and just to think. Think, you know, I can wait till tomorrow till the recycling centre opens and I can take it up there.
Yeah, I think sometimes I'm guilty of skipping reason because it seems people can't be reasoned with. It's the same with dog fouling and stuff, you know. We keep trying to appeal to people's better judgment, but that doesn't seem to work. So I'm defaulting now to the stick rather than the carrot. But you're right. OK, Councillor Jerry McMonagle, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time. It's horrible to see. I was walking, though, down... Not walking. I was driving down from here, down towards the hospital on Friday. What was it, Saturday? I can't remember which. And there was three young lads walking down on the far side of the road, and the three of them, whatever they were eating or whatever they were unpacking, they just unpacked it and they chucked the rubbish into a... There's a hedge down here. It's like... It's not a hedge in an organised sense, right? It's just a hedge along the side of the road, and they just chucked the stuff into the hedge. And it's perfectly visible. It's not invisible, but they just walked down. So that's three young lads there. I'm not being judgy, right? But they just... tucked the wrappers off and chucked it straight into the hedge. And that's littering. And it looks disgusting. And you could see it. You could see what they'd thrown in there. And it's just unfortunate. So that's those young lads. I mean, they're not going to have any problem dumping black bags up on a nice walk somewhere in the mountains, are they? Because they're able to do that with three or four cars passing and able to see them. And they just chuck it in. They don't care. So that's the next generation coming through. What hope do we have? They're not representative of all young people, don't get me wrong. But most people don't dump in scenic spots. Most people don't not clean up after their dogs. So, you know, I'm not judging an entire generation. I'm just saying there are those within the next generation who have no problem whatsoever dumping stuff on the side of the road, thinking, well, someone else is going to pick that up, aren't they? Paul Canning, Keir Hurlock of Donegal County Council, good morning to you.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Doing great, Paul. Right, so this is in relation to a proposed variation to the county development plan from 24 to 30. So what's on the table for discussion here?
Everything's on the table for discussion within them towns that you've mentioned only at this point in time. The as you say, Dunloe, Ballyshannon, Bridgend, Cairn, Donegal Town and Killybegs. They are strategic towns. Now, there were seven of them, but Balbuffet is... we're working at Balbuffet at different stages. But those towns at the minute are in for a vary to their plan. Reason being, there's a few items. The flood zones have changed in a lot of places. And also, we have a national policy coming down that we have to adhere to in certain circumstances. So regarding the towns, each of those towns... We'll have an open day for you to visit them. It's actually the 27th, I think, the kickoff in the different areas. So from the 27th to the 29th, that Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, they will. So keep an eye out for where they are going to be at.
Okay, and I'm not trying to dilute the significance, but is this just a little bit of paperwork, a bit of realignment just to make sure we're compliant, or is there something significant going on?
That's a bit of that, yes, that we have to be aligned. But there is an opportunity then if the people, those towns were already, so those towns had development plans per se. So if there's items on there that the people are not happy with, there's an opportunity for them to sort of get their voices heard and put in. But there's no point in coming and sort of speaking on a one liner. They need to sort of have it done on paperwork and have it backed up as to a rationale as to why you feel this will work. And there is, you know, there will be, I would say there will be an uptake in the Bridgend one because there is a bypass route selected. Preferred route selected going completely through the village of Bridgend. So I would say there will be people in the Bridgend area that will be concerned in relation to that, and I would say There is an open day in St. Angus, the National School there in Bridgend, on the Tuesday from 4 o'clock to 8. And I would advise those people to call there and speak to the council reps in relation to that one. That's one because it's in my patch. Like, but there is items where you have to get your voice set. Now, saying that, those town plans, there also, as you mentioned, there's a area in Cock Hill that's just been changed from phase two residential to phase one, has been brought forward, and there are also land zonings for RZLT and a number of the residential zone land tax and a number of other settlements that have had them. They're getting changed for the purpose of the infrastructure's not in place for it.
Mm.
So there is an opportunity for people to come in and say, my land is not in an area that has the proper infrastructure, so I want to take it out of that land zoning.
Yeah, and I think this is so... you mentioned, obviously, Bridgend because of your particular local interest, but I think people really need to brief themselves on what's being proposed here, see if it impacts them or if they have an opinion in relation to that, and then make an effort to go along to one of these public drop-in events, which I'll mention in a moment. But as I say, there's too much really for me and you to go through here and now, but certainly there could be stuff in there, if you're minded, to have a look at.
Yeah, and I would advise, it's not just because I'm in the game, I would advise people that are in them smaller towns to go to their local architect, engineer, whoever, because a lot of people struggle with reading maps, for a better word, you know, and go and speak to them that they might be using them for planning further down the line, and go and ask them to say, listen, does this suit me? Is this going to hindrance me? Or what is the story with it? And have that conversation. Now, the window was short. It's Black Friday in February. The 13th of February is the D-Day. So just before you're buying your Valentine's card, you need to get your submission
just
in.
Just before. The last day to forget to buy it. Right, so St. Angus National School, Bridgend, 4 to 8 p.m. on Tuesday the 27th. Council Chamber, Donegal Town, Public Services Centre, 4 to 8 on the same day there. Then the following Wednesday, the 28th, Ballyshannon Library, the Council Chamber and on Clonleah Public Services Centre, both between 4 and 8 p.m. The Bayview Hotel, the following day, Thursday 29th, Bayview Hotel, Killybegs, 4 to 8 p.m. And then the Council Chamber, Carrandonna Public Services Centre, 4 to 8 p.m. And have a look, have your say and see if it does impact on you. And you can go to the council website as well and have a look through the proposed variations and link to key documents there. So people advised to do that. Paul, thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
you very much.
Bye-bye. Take care. And just like that, the DL debate is back. Brendan Devaney, good morning to you. How are you keeping?
Good morning, Greg. Thanks for having us.
Start of a new year now of the DL debate. Short break.
That's it.
The season's
back with a bag.
It's a narrow enough gap when you think about it, isn't it? Only a couple of weeks. Come here. Obviously, you know, a quick turnaround from the McKenna Cup to the league. Might focus on the men's football if you don't mind. Firstly, what have we learned from Donegal through the McKenna Cup? I mean, obviously, lots of new talent there, and I think Jim McGuinness wants to keep as many of those guys active as is possible. But can we read anything into it as we look forward to the league and obviously then on to the championship?
Yeah, definitely, Greg. I mean, every team wants to unearth a few new players coming into the new season. I think what it's shown up from our club championship, players that perform well are being given an opportunity here. There's a lot of them, you know, right across the board, you know, particularly the young lads, of course, from Ford Masters, Torla Carr, Conor McCahill, Kevin Muldoon. Big Kieran Gallagher, who had a brilliant season for Niamh Connell in midfield. He's been given loads of time. Paul O'Hare from Glencolm Kill as well. And even the likes of Gavin Mulroney deputising has been brilliant. And goals as well. And his place kicking has been first class. So, listen, there's loads of pluses in there. Of course, the two-goal Shane Malone the last day as well. Another fellow performed brilliantly in the championship for Niamh Connell. So I think that's very encouraging. You know, people doing well in the championship. Jim's obviously watching them, saying, right, do you want to make the step up? But what I've seen of these guys is they fit so seamlessly in. Greg, I remember years ago when people come in, you know, pre-season competitions, maybe people wouldn't be in the best of shape. Wee bit of a turkey and ham belly on you. And it would be slow to get going, you know, but it's so changed now. Everybody is so on it as an athlete, and the way that Jim has the team set up in terms of coaching and then mentally as well coming in, you can just see guys coming in and they're just doing what they're supposed to do, as in using their talents, and none of them look out of place. Every one of them just looks like they're ready for county football. So very, very encouraging. And I think particularly, you know, when you play the likes of Derry and Monaghan, teams that are very close to Donegal, people would say, in terms of kind of talent and squad and that, you've seen when Donegal kind of flexed their muscles in both games, neither team had any proper response to it. I know Derry did come back in the game in Celtic Park, but that was after Donegal made a raft of changes. And for Monaghan, of course, you in that quarter final last year looked that they had something about them. They're back up into Division One, so that was a massive victory to beat them so convincingly. So great signs going into the new season.
Yeah, exactly. And you could say, oh well, it's very early, and of course it is very early, but it's very early for every team. And this is an indication of preparation. You know, there are some teams in this country that are fantastic at building towards the business end of the season. You know, are we among them now when we're playing so well so early on? As I say, I'm not trying to run away with myself here either, but, you know, at the end of the day, all of the teams playing are all at the same stage of the season. You know, you are comparing like with like, so it's very... very positive indications, I think, as I say, not overstating it, but very positive indications.
I think the big thing there, Greg, is that everybody's trialing players and having a mix of experience. I mean, Hugh McFadden in Antrim and the Monaghan game was given man of the match. Brilliant to see, because we know how key that midfield sector is and having players of his ability out there. But every team has got the mix at the minute going on. We have obviously loads of players missing as well, and a few retired. So You have to say that the fact that we've still been able to play the way we did is a great barometer going into the season. And I think probably a wee bit of hangover just from the All-Ireland final, Greg. But pre that All-Ireland final, Donegal and Kerry were, everybody was saying, the best two teams in Ireland. And I know the match then obviously went so much Kerry's way. But you got to say that there's so much talent in Donegal. And now with those new players that I mentioned coming in and all looking that they can really contribute.
Well, that's
something.
It, because you don't have a squad of disappointed players still thinking about the All-Ireland final. I'm sure there are many within it, but you have fresh people coming in with new and fresh ambitions and putting pressure on. Yes. It, you know, you can see how it definitely can shake that reflection on the final. We're heading into a game with Dublin, which you'll be previewing, of course. It's the kickoff of a season. Fair to say, Dublin, notoriously slow starters, so it might be another game that, are we going to learn too much about the year that lies ahead?
Yeah, I was talking about this before, and we were on about, obviously, Jared Brennan taking time to bed in, and I was saying, yeah, well, hopefully he does, because, you know, that's a big change. New management coming in, new management team, new ideas, so it might be a good time maybe to play them. Like, it's a game that Donegal always savour in our home leg. But no doubt in at home leg, they'll be looking to get off the mark as well and set down the market. That's the big thing people always talk about in the league. If you won your home games, you should stay up. So yeah, that is set up for a cracker, because if Donegal are coming in with this form, and you can imagine all those young players and new players in that we mentioned, like, to play against Dublin and Croke Park, even though it's National League, I mean, that is the start
biggest game of the
career. That's the biggest thing. As you said, you all want to be part of that. So you imagine a training now. It's a brilliant game for us to be kicking off at HQ next week. It's going to be a fascinating encounter. And Greg, people talk about the league and the pace and getting started. I think this will be a high pace, high scoring game. It'll be very entertaining.
The McGregor Cup, actually, just before we go to the hurling, this time of year, we were supposing about, you know, 2-point opportunities. As someone who's kicked a ball, is it harder to kick a 2-pointer at this time of year when it's the temperature's low? I remember back in my days, a long, long time ago, with Niamh Breach, in the winter it'd be like kicking a stone, right? And then in the summer it'd be like kicking a balloon. Is that a factor at all with the 2-point line? No, not at this level.
Yeah, there's a bit, Greg, probably more conditions. The ball's a bit heavier in the cold. Listen, you know, there's no doubt in the air and depending, as I say, on what way the wind's blowing and what have you, it definitely, you know, those really balmy days. People talk about the breeze a lot. If it's just a balmy day, the ball tends to be that bit lighter. It is a little bit easier kicked. But as you're seeing from the club final, even yesterday, there was a couple of unbelievable two-pointers. No more than the one that tied up the game. That took a bit of guts as well. So, yeah, listen, two-pointers is a big thing for us. I think going in, Greg, you looked at probably, again, don't want to go back into final too much, but we didn't really have that enough of a threat in that way. The way we play the ball, we run the ball, we tend to break the lines, we end up inside that 2 point score and we create the space, and we have so many nippy players that we end up clocking up a lot of 1 pointers. So it's one limb, Greg, that if we could add a few more to our score, it would be a help, and we've already seen them this year.
Yeah, that final almost stands alone, separate from the season. It's obviously always going to be an integral part of the season, but it was just... It reminded me of when a boxer just, you know, there's one fight where the legs aren't there, and it that just feels like how that was for us that day. But we're back. McGurk action as well. McGurk Cup hurlers in action as well. What can we take from that? What can we read from that?
Yeah, it was almost three in the spin for the hurlers, Greg. You know, and again, you know, our hurlers. Just amazing group of lads. Mickey McCann, the same, their manager. You know, you look at some of the levels of Derry club hurling, particularly Slochneil, you know, and their heroics, and the fact that Donegal can come together and still be a side that, you know, is they've had some ding-dong battles with Derry this last while, but certainly 2 points up with, I think, 20 seconds on the clock to go, and that last-minute sucker punch goal kind of stole it from Donegal. Donegal had a couple of great goal opportunities themselves in the game that they didn't take, that probably would have put it to bed or given them more of a cushion. But that's, I suppose, that's sport, Greg. But certainly pre-season, you know, it's one of them ones where it's a nice competition to win. The more the McKenna Cup, there's bigger games coming down the tracks.
For sure. And you're kicking off, though, with a big panel. Brendan Kilcoyne, Ryan Ferry of the Donegal News, Michael McMullen of the Gaelic, and former County hurling star Niall Cleary. That is some lineup for the first DL debate of the season, and it's on tonight from 7 p.m. just after the 7 p.m. news. But you can podcast that and listen to it on demand whenever you like. Shortly thereafter, it's available on our website highlandradio.com. And of course, as we head into another year, we're unrivaled in terms of the coverage, previews, reviews, but also live commentary. And everyone looking forward to that first league game, Donegal v Dublin. Brendan, thank you very much indeed. Look
Cheers,
after
man.
Yourself. Bye-bye. That show just after the 7 o'clock news this evening. On the issue of rubbish, maybe if the council made it free or €5 per van car as they used to. But you see, the thing is, we're seeing stuff dumped that is recyclable for free. So we already have indications that people, even if it's free, are less prepared to recycle. Somebody's dumped an old sheep trailer and took the wheels off it. That's on the R254 in Glenveagh National Park, whatever's going on there. In relation to more dumping, I've seen this happening beside me where I live in Creasler, and I saw who did it. There seems to be an opinion that because it's a rural country road rural countryside, that it's okay, but it's never okay, and it almost always feels worse. Could you let people know that there's a broken manhole lid on the road between Ballybuffet and Donegal Town, just past the picnic area? It could cause serious damage to a car or someone on a bike. Not sure if Stranorlar District Council or Donegal Town District Council are responsible. Well, the two separate areas, which I think you've identified yourself. And I can have a look at that, actually. I do have a picture of that. It was sent through to us. And I think it was cyclists, in fact, that it was cyclists that spotted it. And if you're watching the show, you'll see it here. It is pretty dodgy. Someone has put kind of like a blowout tire along it, but that will clean someone off a bike. It'll clean the wheel off a car. So it is a broken manhole lid. It's on the road between Ballybuffet and Donegal Town. It just passed the picnic area, and it could cause serious damage to a car. I don't know who is responsible for that, but it's just in from the yellow line. So say someone veered slightly to the left, or whether they should or should not, pulled in slightly to let someone past. If you hit this, trust me, you would know you would hit it, because I'm looking at a picture of it here. So I don't know who's responsible. It could be the TII. Who's to say? Back with more after these. Michael O'Dowd is co-founder of Cochrane and joins me on the programme now. Thank you very much, Michael.
Thank you, Greg, for having me on the show.
Talk to me a little bit about Cochrane.
Well, CARAM is a new group that was set up by a number of disability activists, people with disability, and those of us who are advocates for people with disability. And we set up because we just wanted to challenge government thinking, government actions, government policy across a range of disability issues.
Our focus today is on calls for the local authority in Donegal to take decisive action to increase the employment of people with disabilities. Because we would be failing in this regard. Is that fair to say?
Well, I certainly wouldn't be critical of the county councils, and in particular Donegal County Council has done quite well on these issues. But our call is for county councils across the country to get involved in a campaign to look for more people with disabilities to be employed within the public sector. Now, just on Donegal, I think the latest figures are that 6% of the workforce has a disability. And I'm also aware that the Access Officer in Donegal, in conjunction with the Centre for Independent Living, made a very good video recently in relation to employing people with disabilities. But overall, nationally, what we're really failing in terms of pushing this particular agenda forward. As an example, the figures that I quoted there are for 2024. They were published on the 23rd of December last month. That's 12 months after they were aware of what the figures were. So we're looking for immediate release of figures and for the increase of the number of people employed.
Is the 6% of those in employment having a disability, is that a national figure or a Donegal figure?
So that's specific to Donegal.
Okay. Do we know what the national figure is?
Well, if you look at the public sector, it's roughly about 4.5%. But if you take it more generally, it would be a bit lower. Mm. Now, there is, and I don't want to sort of confuse everyone by throwing out too many figures, but the employment gap between people with disabilities and people without disabilities is the highest within the European Union, highest in Ireland within the EU. So there's a lot of work to be done. And we're asking county councils up and down the country, county councillors in particular, who have their feet on the ground, they feel the pulse of the local area, to get involved in this campaign and in effect lead it.
Yeah, what's the lived experience of this, Michael? You have a son with intellectual disability. He struggles to get work. So, you know, what is the lived experience for him or for others, just to give us an example of how tough it can be?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. The lived experience really is that that people have the ability, but that they struggle to actually get the opportunity. And that's the problem. And certainly with intellectual disabilities, the rate of unemployment is much, much higher than with other disabilities. And in fact, part of the campaign going forward is that we would look for additional reporting of people who have severe disabilities and their employment levels. So like people generally are good, but the difficulty is getting in the door, proving that you have something to offer and proving that, you know, that
so it's to
have,
get a chance, really. It's to have an opportunity to maybe counter any preconceived notions of someone's ability and what they can contribute. Give the person a chance.
Absolutely, Greg. And that's why, for instance, I think the local authority is a good place to start, because there isn't a huge emphasis on the profit and making money that you have in private industry. And also people with disabilities working in the public sector, working in county councils, are very visible to the private sector as well as the public sector. Getting people in the door, letting others see how valuable they are as colleagues is really what this is about.
And just to be clear, and it's really so I'm clear, Michael, the statistics we've talked about now, up until now, are they across employment in general or specific to local authorities, government, etc.?
Yeah, so the only figures that are published generally are figures within the public sector.
Yeah,
so
okay.
Every single local government and government agency has to, on an annual basis, declare how many people with disabilities they have employed. Now, there are issues about what constitutes the census that they take. It's certainly not totally fit for purpose, but it's a start. And the other thing, of course, is that the government launched a policy for people with disabilities in October, November of last year. And they said that they consulted with disability organisations. But if you actually look at that, the consultation process, and it's published, it shows that the organisations look for a 10% target level. Mm. The government came back with 6%. So they're not. The government aren't even listening.
Is it not possible that this is a low figure and that the figure might be higher? And I don't want to sound silly, right? But there are people that maybe don't want to disclose they have a disability, or it could be a hidden disability. So is it possible that the 6% figure for Donegal, for an example, maybe it's higher?
Yes, and I think that that's one of the criticisms of the method that's used. The other criticism is that the definition of disability, I think the bar is quite low. For instance, some councils use a definition which states that if you have difficulty listening to the television, please describe yourself as having a disability. So like the National Disability Authority talks about people with a severe disability and with a lesser disability. Mm. And really, the main problem is people with a
right.
severe
disability. So theoretically, I've a much weaker right eye than the left eye. Arguably, I could be caught in these figures and could be skewing them to make them look better than they are, rather than the point I put to you that they might...
Absolutely. And the National Disability Authority actually stated that figures can be manipulated.
Yeah, okay.
But look, it's what we have at the moment. It's what we want to start with and then make the changes that we believe are also necessary in the way the figures are captured.
Thank you so much for your time. Have a good day. That's Michael O'Dowd, co-founder of Cochram. If you want to search them out, by the way, just in case you want to engage with Michael, it's spelled C-O-T-H-R-O-M. Right. Now, on the issue of gender, we talked about some guidance, or it went a bit beyond guidance, from the ICCL and others stating that employers, schools, they could find themselves being litigated against if they didn't use the chosen pronouns of people and children in the school environment or the work environment. And a lot of you messaged in relation to this. Has the world gone mad, says a listener? We're encouraging young people whose brains have not been developed to think that they can decide whether they identify as male or female, even though they've been born with male or female genitals respectively. Listening to your program about 10 minutes ago, this was on Friday, about entitled to use the bathroom of either male or female, depending on which gender they identify with, or they'll have a right to take someone to court if they aren't allowed to do so. This will increase rape and sexual assaults in either the male or female toilets. It's mind-boggling. But we always go to the worst-case scenario too. Sometimes it can be about how people feel, whether they're uncomfortable or not, even if they don't suffer any physical harm. So they can have an alcohol pop, but they can't have an alcohol pop, but they're allowed to decide their gender before 18, observes a listener there. What about the rights of women? They don't want a man in their changing rooms. Where are the rights of the females? Vice versa. Why not put an I don't know what I am changing rooms everywhere? Well, you see, we can only sort of talk to what's happening in Britain, and that's not seen as a solution. Some high-profile trans activists do not want a separate space because that's conceding that they are the gender that they identify as, and that is a compromise. Now we even want to eradicate 6 days. I remember a magical week as a teen where after the initial day of rest, I spent the remainder of the week playing The Legend of Zelda, The Wind Walker. I felled Ganondorf, and as the credits rolled, I wept as I lost what felt like an old friend. Love, long live 6 days indeed. Never got into The Legend of Zelda. That was more in the Xbox space, I believe. Not more. I was more PlayStation-y. It was more Call of Duty and stuff for me. But anyway. Greg, you had someone on yesterday who needed Hi-Vis and the Gardaí weren't able to supply. You can order Hi-Vis for you, from your couch to 5K or from your couch to 5K group via the RSA website. You need to include your group name and they'll send them out by post if they have enough Hi-Vis in stock. And just built another toilet for transgender. I'd hate to go to a toilet and a male female in there as well. It may well be happening. You probably don't know, but that's not the solution that many feel. Big news from the world of sport. James McLean has left England Championship club Wrexham and made a sensational return to Derry City. And it's not just fleeting, it's a multi-year deal. Declan Boyles, the former Derry City, Finn Harps and Sligo Rovers player, he joins us now. Good morning, Declan.
Hi, Greg. How are you getting on?
Good. This is big news for Derry, but big news for the league too, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I would agree 100%, Greg. We heard rumours of McLean coming back to Derry City over the last, 4 or 5 months, but actually for Derry to go ahead and make that big move, he still had another year and a half, I think, left in his contract over in Wrexham. So for Derry to make that move to bring him back, yeah, he's 36 years of age, but I mean, the profile that he has, 103 caps for Ireland, we know what he brings. He's very enthusiastic, hard working, very determined, and he's determined to come back to Derry City and win a league title. And, it definitely sends out a big marker to the rest of the League of Ireland clubs that Derry are very keen to win the league this year after coming second last year and in Europe as well. So I think it's great. I agree with you. I think it's great promotion for the league. In the last 4 or 5 years, the numbers attending games around the league, both in the Premier League and the First Division, have increased. Mark Scanlon, the FAI director, come in there and done a magnificent job. And the promotion and marketing has all really, really exasperated and gone forward. And having the quality of James McLean and the high profile of him going to the league is definitely a positive.
Yeah, and he's achieved so much in his career. And then, of course, playing with Wrexham more recently and the profile and the growth that club has. There's no doubt he still has the ability. It's what he wants to achieve, right? And you're confident that he's not coming back here just to see off his career at home, that he has ambitions with for other big nights with Derry City.
I think so. I think if you look at how he conducts himself, I mean, he's in really good shape. He went over in 2011 to Sunderland from Derry City. He's been over there obviously 15 years. He's played at the highest level, international level, and the Premier League as well. He's moved down, he's moved back up through the divisions of the Wrexham, and he's played the whole way through that. So he keeps himself in good shape. He plays with his heart on his sleeve all the time. That's how he plays, and he's determined. And, if you listen to some of his interviews on the last couple of days, he's determined to go and win a league. And he could be that extra bit of incentive and extra bit of quality that pushed Derry past Shamrock Rovers and won the Premier League this year. But so time will tell. He signed a multi-year contract, so he's there for 2 years. So, within the 2 years, that'll definitely be something that he'll be planning to do.
Do you think this might help to make a move to the League of Ireland more viable for players who still have something to give, right? But they look at other options, maybe Scotland or America or some of the Saudi leagues or what have you, that I'm not saying it hasn't happened before, but, this is another pathway to big nights in Europe even potentially.
Yeah, I think that's probably key. He's at Wrexham and a chance of him playing in Europe are probably gone by. But, you have that where players coming back in to get a chance. And even players in that championship level in England, they have a chance to play in Europe where they probably wouldn't get a chance over in England because of the Premier League. So dominant and the quality so high. So they have a chance to come to Ireland and play in Europe. There's no doubt the success of both Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers in Europe, that extra money, revenue coming in, 4 and 5 million, has definitely added to the league. You look at Shelburne, obviously, now signing Oran Casey from Cliftonville for 100,000. That's a lot of money in League of Ireland in terms of signing the defender. So there's no doubt the budget has increased. And when you get a bigger budget, you can actually attract better quality players and pay them more money to come into the league. And that only adds to the product that we're trying to sell without the league.
Is now the time, though, to ensure that we don't find ourselves, with a 2 or 3 club league whereby, that money does bring in these good players. And then the you're chasing the promise of more of that money. I mean, some of the European money is mind-boggling. Finn Harps would be able to do an awful lot of work with it. Is it time maybe for the powers that be in the league? And I'm not sure how it might be done. Need to make sure that we don't find ourselves, if we're not already there, right, with effectively a couple of clubs vying for the European spots and the rest, and then Division One.
Yeah, listen, and that's the problem. And it's very evident over the last couple of years, the team that gets promoted, we've seen Cork last year, and the last couple of years have come up and went back down again and come back up again and went back down again. So it's been very, very difficult for the first division clubs to come up and, to be sustained in the Premier League because the gulf's getting bigger and bigger. There's no doubt about it. the gulf of the quality of players in Shelburne's and in Shamrock Rovers and Derry Cities are ahead of everybody else. But it's still a very competitive league, you know. So, you know, you're going to get that. If you look at the Premier League, it's the same four or five teams in the Champions League. If you go around the whole of Europe, it's the exact same four teams that normally are up there. They have the biggest budget. They have the best quality players as a result of that. And, you know, it's very, very hard to be competitive. But, you know, I suppose the Premier League, for me this year, has been very, very good. Standards been excellent. It's a really, really entertaining league. But there's no doubt that the quality of the players in the Premier League versus the quality of the teams in the First Division is getting bigger and bigger, and the gulf's getting harder for First Division teams to make an impact. It'll be really interesting this year, Greg, with Dundalk coming up. They've signed a lot of players. They looked like they spent a lot of money as well, so it'll be really interesting to see how they progress this year.
Yeah, for sure, and it could just attract more money into the league and you know, lift some of those teams. All right, brilliant stuff, Declan. It's positive for the league. It's great for Derry, and it's going to put more eyes on the game too, which I think is always a positive. Declan, thanks for chatting to us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Take care. Declan Boyle, former Derry City, Finn Harpson, Sligo Rovers player there, reacting to the news that James McLean has signed a multi-year deal to return to Derry City. Some of your comments coming in so far. I'm getting annoyed listening to Highland Radio now. Sorry about that. What's the point of building greenways if they're not maintained? Will any of this money go to maintaining the greenways already in Donegal, or is it just more jobs for the boys? Yes, I understand. Big amount of money allocated to Donegal, 10 plus million. But it came a week or 2 weeks after the state of our current greenways was highlighted with the ingress of the dirt of them and the ingress from the sides narrowing them significantly as well. We have a problem with maintenance. It comes up on this show time and time again. Let me see. Okay, roads. There's a bad oil spill at Ray Bridge heading into Falkara. Councillor Michael McClafferty passed that on to us, so be careful. On the issue of illegal dumping, Greg, could you highlight this? There are beds being dumped on the N56 going towards the Dunluce Road. There's also people dumping black bags of rubbish there. County Council would need to lift it, right? Okay, so that's the N56. Now, you can't expect the council to lift it unless you report it to them. So if you haven't, please make sure you do, because they're pretty good, I think, generally speaking, at coming and getting that stuff sorted. It's offensive to people with physical disabilities to discuss their issues with people with intellectual disability issues and vice versa, as they're very different issues. Yeah, but both face similar challenges as well, I think. Lifford Road, all potholes beside Drumahl in the Munduri area. Okay. And last one, just before a break, we need nationwide ads to get into the person's mind that littering is a dirty habit. Even at the cinema, lift your rubbish and bin it on the way out. I know, I've seen that, you know, and in the cinema, you get up and it's an absolute disgrace. And it's not like there's a million people in there, so you know who's doing it. And then some poor person has to come in and clean it up. Now we are joined on the programme by Kilgar. Good morning to you. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hi, Greg. How are you doing?
You believe it's time the world, Europe, gets tough with Trump. Of course, just to bring people into the loop, he has said that the world is not secure unless the US has green land. He wants it, whether it's to buy it or take it. And those that are opposing him, he's threatening 10% tariffs, i.e. on us. So that's his weapon of choice to try and get his friends to see things the way he sees it. What's your take on it, Kilgar?
Well, I've listened and I've seen what Trump has done in Venezuela. Everything that Trump does is basically for money. As you know, with Venezuela, it's the oil. With Greenland, it is nothing to do with security. It's to do with what's underneath the ground. But my main problem is, if history has shown us anything, it is dictators, and the only one I would know probably best would have been Hitler. What you do with him, you keep letting him get away. He keeps going. He keeps getting this. He keeps getting that and keeps going. There has to be a stage where we say, and I think now it has arrived, we say, no, this is it. End of story. Remember, with trade, America needs the rest of the world as much as we need America. It works both ways. It's not a one-way street. And I think we've come to the stage where we have to change.
But it's a big shout to get into a staring competition with Donald Trump, isn't it? Especially when your actual security relies on him. And also, too, he may be prepared to burn the house down to get his way. So if you were to, that's a high-risk strategy. You'd really need to be prepared to follow through on it, I think, because he seems to be pretty resilient in getting his own way.
I think we do need to follow through. But, I mean, you're saying about, you know, he's burning his own house down. I mean, what is he doing in his own country? He is ruining his own country. He's getting everybody against each other, people. I mean, he's ruining his own country, and we think, you know, he's okay to let look after the rest of us. It's not on. I mean, he's no better than Putin, what he's doing. He's doing the same thing. If I want something, I do it. And all these other countries like Russia, like China and all, saying, maybe Thailand, you know, maybe we'll go across to Taiwan or all these places that they want, you know, why not? Sure, nobody's going to stop us either. They're not going to do it. I think we need to stop. And I genuinely, this is the one thing, and I know it seemingly is going ahead, but going over to America and with this bowl of shamrocks and looking up to him, for the want of a better word, I wouldn't do it. We've had it. And they say American companies, you know, we would lose, yes. But remember, American companies are making money that's going back into America too. So, you know, again, it's not all one way. We've got to stand up to this man, and we've got to get a backbone and say enough is enough.
The government will argue that we have a unique opportunity, that we might disagree with the United States on Greenland, but the United States is our friend. And this is an opportunity to go into the White House and express that opposition to what Trump is doing. In other words, it's a really advantageous level of access rather than disadvantageous. You know that that's the spin that's going to be put on this right up until March 17th or whenever Micheál Martin heads over there. You don't buy that, though?
Well, I mean, the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, he was supposed to have his ear, though, quietly and getting it. And sure, what has happened now to them? Sure, he says he's going to throw on the tariffs. You know, he doesn't care. He does not care. And people have got to get that into their head. If you say to him, I'm going up that way, and he says, that's right, we're all going up that way, he'll go whatever way he wants, and that's just it. And we have to get a backbone. Europe, the world, we have to get a backbone and say enough is enough. If you don't want to trade, you don't want to trade. It's going to hurt. It definitely will hurt, but it's going to hurt them as much as it's going to hurt us.
Okay, and it comes down to that too, but that's the hurt game, isn't it? But it seems you can't negotiate with Donald Trump. He just has a notion. I mean, like, it's there's no reference to the Senate, the upper house, Congress, whatever you want to call it. Like, this is one person who's running that country. I mean, and he went in and did what he did in Venezuela. And it was framed as an apprehension by the world's media rather than what it was, is something of a kidnapping, I think. But there was not a peep out of the politicians in America, the so-called decision makers. It really is moving to a one-man show over there, because he can do whatever he likes and doesn't seem to be able to be stopped.
Exactly. It seems to be basically a dictatorship, if he says it. I don't know if the Supreme Court, they're coming out with something this week.
It's about whether or not his use of tariffs are legal or not.
Yeah. I don't know what will happen there, but we'll assume they say it's illegal. What will happen? You know, this is the story. He seems to be able to do whatever he wants to do. And, I mean, we're talking about the rest of the world, but he seems to be able to do it in his own country to his own people, which I don't know. I just find crazy, you know, what he is doing to his own people and what he's threatening to do to them. It's like trying to cause a civil war in his own country.
It's kind of interesting because everything's tilted a little bit for me, because, you know, when he was coming into power for his second term, part of me thought, right, you know, if he's very keen on ending the war in Ukraine, the Middle East and what have you, if that's what he wants his legacy to be, I don't need to like him. I don't need to like his attitude on certain things. But, you know, if you look at it from a global perspective, if he brings stability, well, then, you know, that's a good thing, especially, you know, if you've got children and grandchildren. But it seems to have gone the other way now. It's actually his leadership in the United States. It's making the world feel more unstable. It feels like he could fall out with Russia at any time. He and the Chinese seem to be on a collision course. If he wants to grab world leaders and if he wants to have a land grab, well, the Chinese, the Russians and other superpowers perhaps feel they need to do the same. So instead of his time in the White House bringing stability, for me now, it seems to be bringing less stability. I feel like this world is more unstable now than it has been before I was born.
Yeah.
Maybe the Cold War would be the Cold War probably would be the last point.
No, I'd agree 100% with that, because I, even during the Cold War, I don't think I remember. I do not think that I would have been as worried. I know I was a lot younger, but you know, you are right. I thought maybe when he came into power that he would stand up to the likes of Putin, and that I thought he might stand up to Israel and other countries and say what you're doing is wrong. You know, and that would bring stability. But he's anything he says, you don't know. You can't believe him, number one. That's because basically he's a liar. You don't know what he's going to do. So you can't trust him. And world powers or any power, any even small powers, can say, oh, master, we can get away with this. He can get away with it. We'll do
like,
it.
Why would the Chinese not go and take control of Taiwan if he goes and takes control of Greenland? Why wouldn't they? They would look weak if they didn't.
Well, to be quite honest with you, I'm just waiting, because I think the way he's going, they're saying, well, you know, we all agreed to these different things. And as I say, Putin looking for all these other bits and pieces that he's looking for. I mean, I actually think the war in Ukraine or Trump has made it worse. I genuinely think he's made it worse than what it was, you know, because he's so indecisive when it comes. One minute, you know, he's telling them this, he's telling them that. I think he's really caused, as you say, I'm more worried now than I've ever been. And my kids, but I've grandchildren and all, and I just do not know where things are going.
Mm, yeah. Okay, thank you for that, Kilgore. I appreciate it. I appreciate your opinions. Keep them coming. 086 60 25,000. Nathan, what's your view on this? Good morning.
Hi. Yeah, I'd actually just sent a text. And
I know, but we weren't going to let you away with a text. Come on, we wanted to speak to you, Nathan.
But I was just saying that I don't think we should be soft on Trump at all. I think, in fact, how we're handling it so far is very soft. Mm. I think it's time to just start a sell-off of US bonds and crash their entire market. He needs to remember where his money's coming from, and it's us.
I think really that's the big decision that has to be made. How tough is the EU prepared to get with him?
Yeah,
You're saying, right, now is the time maybe to reassert some power.
Some economic dominance. We are the biggest market in the world. We can control America if we put the money where it matters.
Mm. Were you ever a Trump supporter, Nathan, or is this true?
Like in 2015, I thought it would be funny if he got elected, but yeah. I sharply learned that lesson.
Yeah, okay. But you're saying no more Mr. Nice Guy. Flex the muscles. If it takes crashing the American economy, do so.
Yeah.
All right, Nathan.
Plain and simple.
Yeah, lovely to chat to you. Thanks so much, and thanks for taking the call. Does it matter if Trump is right or good? If the US wants Greenland, they'll have it, and we'll do nothing because we can do nothing. The USA doesn't need trade. They can totally be self-sufficient, where we are nowhere near the same in Europe. Maybe a little bit of a different point of view to Nathan there. Last year, our politicians were shafted and Donald Trump invited Conor McGregor. You all have a short memory. I totally agree. If Ireland had any morals, they would not go to America for St. Patrick's weekend. Our reception has never been the same since Trump came to power. What will be next? Will he move into Ireland because he wants control of Shannon? Well, nothing like that is not impossible. That is the situation we are in now, that he might feel as a springboard into Europe, that Ireland should be the 51st or 52nd state. Like, it is not impossible. We are a sort of a neutral country. We're not NATO. I know there are some sort of protections with us being part of the EU, but Greenland's part of NATO, right? So, well, not Greenland isn't part of it, but Denmark is, which owns or runs, which runs Greenland. So, you know, nothing is off the table in this day and age. Right, we're going to go to Minister Neil Richmond very shortly, but just a very brief word with Cathy, if that's all right. Cathy, thanks for joining me. And we've been talking about greenways, and you've got views in relation to this.
I do, yes.
Talk to me.
I would do a bit of walking and all the rest, and I do specifically remember walking the new bridge in Derry, and the Crescent Link, and all these traffic passing by, and the smell of the fumes. And I just was very aware that I was inhaling all those fumes, these fumes. And these greenways are being built along roadways. And walkers, cyclists, the dogs, everybody is inhaling them fumes from those vehicles, big trucks, cars passing by.
Yeah, it seems counterintuitive.
There's nothing green about it.
And there's big proposals for, which I think will be really significant, a greenway between Ballybuffet and Donegal Town. It would be great if it was along the old rail line.
And there's a beautiful old rail line there, and that view on the Barnesmore Gap would be absolutely stunning to walk along. But are they going to put it along the road? I don't know.
All right. Okay.
Nothing healthy to our health.
All right, Cathy, if anyone else has any views in relation to that, 086 60 25000. Neil Richmond's Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora. Neil, before we talk about this funding announcement today, a lot of people interested in the situation as it relates to Greenland, Trump, the EU, the UK, and where we're at this point. How tough a line do you think the EU, if you don't mind me asking, needs to take with Trump on this matter?
Yeah, we're living in, once again, interesting times, as the Chinese curse goes, to be quite frank, Greg. I think the EU, first and foremost, will and must provide a united line. Threats of tariffs against the 8 EU member states aren't acceptable. They're a threat against all of us in the European Union. And we've seen before very worrying commentary and acts from this American president towards the European Union, never mind the disparaging comments by his vice president and commerce secretary and others. And I think we'll see today, Simon Harris, our Taoiseach, is with finance ministers in Brussels, and on Thursday, the Taoiseach will travel for, I suppose, an emergency European Council meeting to make sure we do get, on one hand, a united European response, but to the crux of your question, we have to make sure that the response is firm and fair, but it doesn't actually self-inflict damage. So a lot of people will hear about the various measures that the EU can take, and one of which, the anti-coercion instrument, the ACI, that the French President Emmanuel Macron has asked to be deployed, would be massively damaging, yes, for the American economy, but also for the EU economy, including that of Ireland. So any actions, you have to make sure that you don't necessarily respond in kind to the US. The first of most important thing is continuous dialogue, and we saw that before last April when we were talking about tariffs originally. But look, I'll be honest with you, Greg, there is no clear pattern of how this goes. We're not dealing with business as usual.
Yeah, indeed. And you talk about having to be careful not to inflict damage. Unfortunately, that seems to be the Trump's MO. It's almost like a staring competition, do you know what I mean? But at the end of the day, this is land owned by a NATO country, and he's talking about putting tanks there. Now, there's not the road infrastructure for that, but it would be the message that it sends. I mean, this is NATO, this is world security, not to mention, you know, the global financial markets as well. But he seems, it's almost like it's come to him in a dream. It's not logical. It just seems to be that this is something he's not going to give up on. We have to play it really carefully, but at the same time, you know, not bow to him either, I'd imagine.
You don't bow, and you don't necessarily respond to every social media post or errant comment. It's remarkable. You know, American politicians have had designs on Greenland since the 1860s. That's the first time this came up, that America should kind of do a modern day version of the Louisiana Purchase. Pat Buchanan, the right wing independent candidate through the 90s, said taking Greenland. Rand Paul, others have said this consistently. Trump would have talked about this in the autumn before he took over the presidency as an aim. But the whole point is nonsensical. There is already American military presence in Greenland. America has full access to any mineral concessions that it would like. And yes, Denmark is an ally, and the people of Greenland voted in the last two decades in a referendum to remain an autonomous state within the Kingdom of Denmark. Denmark within the European Union, within NATO, a sworn ally of the United States. Dozens of Danish troops fought, and indeed dozens died alongside American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. So there is little to no sense to this, bar some form of posturing, to be quite frank. And that's why the EU shouldn't, and we being part of the EU, shouldn't necessarily overreact in terms of action, but be absolutely firm in our dialogue to try and get a resolution. If he wants to have a greater military presence in Greenland, he's entitled to have that. If he wants to have more access to their mineral concessions, he's entitled to have it. But he can't simply buy Greenland or buy the people of Greenland in to be part of the United States. That's not how the international order works, nor how it should work.
And, I mean, just briefly and finally on this point, obviously it's going to be the story about whether or not we should go to the White House. Honestly, me, I don't think it makes a bit of difference. I think that's just a white noise conversation. And to be honest with you, I would just be going to keep it going until such time as there's another leader in there, because this is fleeting, right? And it is good access. But anyway, that being said, it's still going to be debated left, right and centre over the next couple of weeks. Would you be of the opinion of some of your fellow ministers that this is an opportunity to express face-to-face any concerns that there might be?
Of course, and it's interesting, the people who called on the Taoiseach not to go to Washington last year were the same people who called on the previous Taoiseach not to go to Washington to visit Joe Biden over America's support for Israel. So we have to take that with a pinch of salt. Crucially, it is a long-going tradition, regardless of who the president is. It does provide us with a strong element of access, not just to the president. And I think this is where it's really key. Last year, we sent 9 government ministers to 15 different US states during the week of St. Patrick's Day. It gives us a great opportunity to work beyond the administration at a federal level, at a city level, at a local level politically, but also at a business level. And crucially, with our Irish diaspora of over 30 million people, let's take every opportunity. We saw when Enda Kenny gave very clear the Irish opinion in relation to immigration during Trump's first presidency. And indeed, Leo Varadkar's Taoiseach was very clear on Ireland's position on the Middle East, as was Simon Harris with Joe Biden as president and latterly Donald Trump. So there's always an opportunity. It's well worth taking. And I definitely think that there should be a full suite of Irish ministers going to the United States for St. Patrick's Day, led by the Taoiseach to Washington, D.C.
And again, just to be fair and balanced too, recently we had Micheál Martin in China, and at the same time it was announced that beef markets would be reopened. Open. So that's the kind of deals that can be done. It's not always, I don't think actually, in fairness, a lot of what goes on is not necessarily very well communicated back home sometimes, you know what I mean? But anyway, moving on. You've met with Trocra Concern and the Irish Red Cross, and each are going to receive €1 million in Irish aid funding for humanitarian projects in Ukraine. With the passage of time and maybe even the polarisation of the conversation about Ukraine, do you think it's been lost that there's an awful lot of people over there in very dire situations?
Yeah, absolutely. There's an element of war fatigue has set in as we're coming up on the third anniversary of the Russian full-scale invasion of Ukraine. Bear in mind that they invaded previously in 2014. And it was barely an item on the news that 2 people died in Ukraine last night following drone attacks from the Russian military. It is still ongoing. And bear in mind, we're in the grips of winter. The temperatures are minus 20 degrees in some parts of Ukraine. And the money that we have given to Trocra Concern and the Irish Red Cross are for winterification programs in the most dangerous regions, the Odessa, Donetsk, Kharkiv, where their partners, be it Caritas on behalf of Trocra or the International Red Cross, are able to get into people who don't have any heating, who don't have full shelter because the Russians have attacked their energy plants, their energy providing plants. And this is literally a case of providing low temperature bedding and blankets to people who can't leave and are exposed to the very worst of this conflict. Civilians who are caught up in a conflict that no one's talking about at the moment, but I would argue has a massive material impact on the lives of everyone across Ireland, be they in Donegal or Dublin or Cork.
Yeah, people will be listening to this, Neil, and I just want to say this to you before, rather than read the text afterwards. People will say, you know, there's 15,000 plus homeless in Ireland. We've got people dying on the streets of our capital who are homeless. And, you know, this money would be better spent at home. And I'm literally reading to you perhaps what a text would be that will come in. And I just want to do it while you're here, just so you can explain how things are divvied up, etc.
And you know what? I have no issue with people saying that, Greg, to be honest. People are right to ask, you're spending money, why are you spending money? And if we weren't spending any money domestically, they would have a fair point. But of course, we have record amounts being spent on housing, on health and education. And indeed, everyone who wants accommodation, shelter, gets it at the moment. Rough sleeping is a complicated thing. Let's not try and just cast it with a generalization, but it is a real issue and we are putting resources there. But crucially, the impact of Russia's brutal war in Ukraine is being felt by Irish people. It's causing our energy bills to go up. It's causing our grocery prices to go up. It is creating serious instability in our state. And we have seen over 110,000 Ukrainians have come to Ireland. 80,000 are still here. And whilst they are welcome, they do provide an element of strain on resources that need to be met. So if we are providing the supports for the people of Ukraine in Ukraine, one, it's simply the right thing to do. It's the decent thing to do. Ukraine are our allies, but it is also an investment. It's smart money to be spending. We need this war to end quickly. We need it to end in a way where Russia is not allowed to claim victory, because if it's not Ukraine, it'll be Poland or the Baltic states and whoever else next, which have a far greater impact on Ireland. So this relatively small investment of €3 million to literally stop people freezing in their houses because they are being bombed by a dictator in Moscow is a good way to spend Irish taxpayers' money in support of the cause, but it pales in comparison to the billions and billions of euro that we're paying, spending and investing domestically in all the services that listeners will rightly text in about, or indeed they'll pepper my social media pages with comments.
Okay, the line's just broken down there at the last minute, but it was literally as you were finishing speaking. So for now, Neil Richardman, Minister of State for International Development and Diaspora, thank you very much for that. Right, on the greenways, Greg, it's interesting that there is millions for active travel on greenways, yet there's nothing going to active travel in and around Letterkenny. Well, all that controversial work that's ongoing is active travel, by the way, whether we believe it's the money being spent correctly or not, or on the right things, but that's all. That is all active. They've made it clear while they are in favour of creating them, no allowance has been made to maintain them. This would only happen in Ireland as a farmer who had to give up his land for one of them. Surely they should all be stopped until proper maintenance is available. It does seem strange to create developments that we can't look after and still propose to do more. But there you go. Michelle Brown joins me now. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you with us. 2026 marks 30 years since the Divorce Act came into effect in Ireland. It's January. Do we see a surge in interest in divorces at this time of year?
Yeah, 2026 does see a 30-year anniversary, a big landmark the anniversary of the divorce referendum and removing the ban on divorce, and it's a good time to mark what has happened since. But answer to your question, yes, January we see a surge. It seems to be a pattern for the past number of years. I don't necessarily feel it's about the actual season, but it's just a time that we say we get our affairs in order, I suppose, and deal with you know, the realisation that relationships are in trouble. So, yeah, it seems to be a busy time for us in January.
Do we see trends in reasons given for seeking a divorce?
No, not necessarily. I think, you know, the breakdown of a relationship is something that is tough, always was. But I think what's happening is that we're saying, you know, we're going to deal with this. It's acceptable to break up. It's not something we're going to remain in a really unhappy marriage, whereby, you know, perhaps years ago we did because we felt we had to. So I think that has changed. But the reasons why that we realize we, you know, are with the wrong people, or, you know, the personalities they're not, it's not what people assume, that there's, you know, drama behind these breakups. It's generally sad breakdown of relationship. Mm.
And it is inevitable, and now we have the mechanisms to formalise it. Is there stuff that we should be doing before we get married, or should be normalised in this country to make the inevitable for some couples as manageable as possible?
Yeah. So, look, we've been doing things with the Divorce Act for 30 years. A lot has happened to improve how we can deal with divorce. I suppose when the inevitable happens and the relationship breaks down, it's what's the best first step, I suppose, that's to have the correct information, I would say. We need to understand what's involved in the traditional court system, and we need to kind of, I suppose, be informed about the pitfalls of that and make the right decisions for ourselves. So, what should be done in advance, just to get to that, I suppose, as well, that's really important. We don't have recognition of prenuptial agreements in Ireland, and that is something that could be done and could you know, affect really positive change in what's going on in the courts in Ireland. So first of all, in advance, there is nothing we can do, because we simply do not recognise prenuptial agreements in Ireland. So unfortunately, you know, having the conversations and saying when we're coming into relationships, oh, I would not touch your pension, or I have no interest in property that you had in advance to marriage, is pointless, because we simply don't have the legal mechanism in place. So that's something that, you know, I've spoken about. There's a number of people working in this industry that have spoken about, and it seems to be a no-brainer to say, look, let's legislate for prenuptial agreements. But what we do have is what has happened in these 30 years. I mean, the divorce referendum and the 1996 Divorce Act gave us permission to divorce in Ireland. But the Mediation Act that came along in 27 has allowed us to be part of our separations and divorces. So it's really, really important that people need to understand that they have a choice out there. Mm. It is not a requirement to bring our spouses to court and have court cases that we know are lengthy. We know they're expensive. We know they're emotionally draining on the parties, and they have a massive negative effect on the children. So it's to look at what's there. And okay, the Mediation Act, in my opinion, is the most powerful thing that we have.
And there's a lot of information out there from Michelle Brown, who's a divorce mediator and author of a book, Scars of Divorce, How to Avoid Them and Achieve an Amicable Divorce in a Modern Society. And it's part of a memoir and part of a practical, it's part memoir, part practical guide, focused on navigating separation and divorce within the Irish legal system. So certainly lots of information in there. Michelle, thank you very much for your time today.
No
Have a
problem.
Wonderful day.
Thanks, Greg.
Look after yourself. Bye-bye. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.